So Ravasha Basa Bechol. Torah prohibits us cooking meat and milk together. Now, if a person wants, based on this prohibition, you know, to go to certain schools where they teach you how to be a chef, there are many issues that you have to be aware of, because even though you might not, even though you, everyone knows they can't eat meat and milk together that was cooked together, there's a special prohibition just cooking meat and milk together. So therefore, in these schools, they might ask you to prepare certain foods, and that might come into a big problem of basa b'chalav. So it says like this: Vasha basa behema b'chalav. Torah says you can't cook the basa behema b'chalav. Shenema l'savasha li b'chalav imo. Torah says you can't cook a kid in its mother's milk. And Bar Pirush, the Lav Lav Gidi, doesn't only mean specifically a kid, a goat, a young goat. Elafilu kol basa behema b'mashma. Any type of animal, there's a prohibition of cooking it with milk. She'in lashem gidi lashem behema. Gidi is a generic name for behema. It's referred to, when you want to refer to the animals, you sometimes refer to the gidi as an example. Well, it's here the lashem gidi. Why does it say the language of the gidi? If you're telling me the prohibition of any animal, so why does it, any kosher animal will see, so why does the Torah specify a gedi? Because it's the Russian gedi, which I bossa dover rach kigdi. Because meat is something soft, like a goat. Like a goat's, like a kid goat whose flesh is very tender, very soft. So the prohibition is cooking the meat. Technically a bone, there's no prohibition of a bone with milk. The prohibition is something that has meat. So if you want to specify meat, you refer to the meat that the kid, that represents soft meat. A boss says a devil rach. You want to refer to meat, you refer to it, because flesh is something which is soft like a gdi. Where do we find that? Where do you see that? Masha'atam makes it become a comus with Torah. Many times the Torah says Shakasav Gidi, the Torah says Gidi, Vutzach Nefarish Gidi Izim. And many times the Torah says Gidi Izim. Why does the Torah just say Gidi? Why does the Torah here is where it says Gidi? It doesn't say Gidi Izim from the goat family. It doesn't say kid. It doesn't say Gidi Izim. It just says Gidi. Why does it, at other places it says Gidi Izim? Halamata Shemakum Shenega Shemamar Gidi Stam. Where is the gedi alone without the word followed by izim, lavdashe gedi izim? Doesn't mean specifically a kid goat from the sheep family, from the goat family. Any animal flesh from any animal is similar to the goat, which is from a kosher kid goat, which is from the kosher family. That's the type of animal the Torah prohibits you to cook with milk. Technically, in one respect, it would come out that if you would cook pork with milk, it would be permitted. I mean, that's Torah for sure. There's no problem. Whether there's any rabbinic issues or not, that's a different question. But for sure, there's no biblical prohibition. And that, we've done research regarding pork with milk on a rabbinic level. Is there any prohibition on that? But for sure there's no prohibition on a Torah level. To cook it together.
So in that case,
if the guy is going to that school to be a chef, so I would request the not kosher animals who would request to cook with the milk.
Very interesting.
That's
what's
it doing? What's it doing? If you can say, you can't even anyway, so I'll cook it. Let's see the Minchas. Before the Minchas Chinuch, he gives a couple of reasons for the Mitzvah Chinuch, and one reason he quotes is the Rambam. The Rambam says that there are people that serve Avodah Zarah. That the way they serve Avodah Zarah is they're mixing milk and meat together. is why they admit to what they meet together. I presume maybe they, I presume they would bring it to the Avos Azara. It was the mitzvah of the mitzvah of meat together, and the Torah wanted us to stay far away from mixing of meat and milk together. Anything that's similar to how people worship after the Zara, something which was commonplace to use. So the Zara Hashem was interested in keeping us far away from that. So the Rambam suggests that's maybe the reason why the Torah forbids us to eat milk and meat together. But that's one of the things they used to, they served it by served it with the Zara by mixing and milk and meat together. But the Chinuch himself is not satisfied with that answer, with that explanation of the Rambam. And we all know there are many, it could be a more than one reasons why the Torah forbade us to have milk and meat together. I mean, it's definitely, you can look at it as a chok, something, it's a myth, it doesn't have a clear reason. There's no obvious reason why you can't cook milk and meat together. Okay, obviously.
You've got to be a lactose intolerant people, thank you.
Okay, but obviously there are many reasons. And the Rambam suggests that reason, like he does for many mitzvahs in the Torah, where the Rambam talks about the idea of where if the mitzvah, if something has some connection, possibly with the Zohar, the way they serve with the Zohar, Hashem many times will forbid us to certain things which are connected to acting in any way which is resembles the connecting to Avodah Zarah. Obviously, Hashem wants us he wants to give us safeguards that we should not come to worship Avodah Zarah, and therefore this is one of them. Obviously, these halachas of Phil says apply in all days and all times. It's not limited to the time when they have the Beis HaMikdash. Men, women are all obligated to mitzvah. It's a lav. It's a lav. And it has a maaser. If a person goes in and he cooks meat and milk together, even if he didn't eat it, he will get malchus. If he's warned, and he goes in and he does it anyways, and he cooks it just for cooking it, he gets his obligated lashes. Let's see what the Ruach HaSunnah says on the mitzvah. So Ravasha, Ayin adim ulchuna perek kol abos, avarim perek tes ma'amal hachal surf, tol shachan aruch yadeya simon pei zayin. I'm room with shachan aruch yadeya simon pei zayin. Something that's clear with shachan aruch, I don't usually go into. Ach ol raksas, I've read up some points. So Ravasha bos of tohoru b'chol of tohoru, mishneim ke zayin. The first thing Ruach HaSunnah talks about, if you cook from a kosher animal, kosher animal with kosher milk, and you have, and how much does a person need to cook in order to be able to transgress his prohibition to get malchus? How much to get lashes? He over the lashes if he does a kezias. So he says, if you have a size of an olive, a total of an olive between the milk and the meat, and you cook an olive size of milk together, a total of an olive size of, which had a combination, the olive size contained milk and meat, of a total of an olive, which is usually the shear of, you know, when it comes to eating certain foods in the Torah, shear achila, is usually the shear of a kezias. The Torah obligates us to eat matzah, it's a kezias, and the prohibition of eating pork is a kezias to get malchus. We'll see here it's unique, and Ruach HaSunnah is going to talk out, but here the Torah doesn't use the language of echila. The Torah says don't cook meat and milk together, and the Torah says it three times in the Torah, and we say that why does the Torah say it three times? Because it's a prohibition to cook it, to eat it, and to have benefit. All three things are eating it. If you would eat meat and milk, if the way it was cooked together, and you eat it the way that, and also the Gemara says, derech bishul esotorah. That means the biblical prohibition of eating milk and meat together would only be if it was cooked together. You go ahead and you take a piece of meat, and then you put a nice cold piece of cheese on the piece of meat, you're closing everything, and it's not cooked together. There's no biblical prohibition. Of eating milk and meat together if it wasn't cooked together. The biblical prohibition, no, but it's definitely biblically prohibited. You know, even if we didn't eat it together, we know there's a biblical prohibition, we have to wait 6 hours. We have to wait 6 hours, we're not supposed to eat milk after having meat for 6 hours, right? At least we, Ashkenazi, hold of 6 hours. Others hold you can't have it just in the same meal. And if some have different husband the way that in Holland they used to wear hours between milk, meat and milk. But the common practice among Ashkenazi, the Rambam, right, 6 hours, because the Gemara says you had to wait between, you have to wait from Suda to Suda. You have to go from one meal to another meal in order for you to go ahead and eat. You have to wait from one meal to another meal. So the Machlokas in the Rishonim, what does it mean one meal to another meal? Some Rishonim say it means literally you finish this meal, clean up the tablecloth, you have to finish meat, you want to to have a dairy, you said Berachas Hamazon, you want to have dairy? No problem. That's how some Rishonim know. That could explain why people, you know, it was a custom of 1 hour in some places. Because why was there a custom of 1 hour? Because they held like that opinion, that as long as you eat together, meaning the prohibition that I told you was only when, was only if you cooked it together. If you didn't cook it together, you ate meat, and now you finished eating meat, and now you have dairy. There's no biblical prohibition. There's no question, even if you have it an hour later, 20 minutes later. There's no question of rabbinic prohibition. Now the question is, what was the rabbinic prohibition? Was it, you have to wait the amount of time from 1 year to another, like 6 hours? And some Rishonim learned, this Machlokas is in Rishonim, why should you wait 6 hours? Some say you wait 6 hours because it takes, because the juices from the meat, the taste, the juices continue for 6 hours, and after 6 hours, then the juices and the taste from the meat dissipates, is no more. Other Rishonim learned shot that in case there's something stuck in your teeth, if you have meat, all of a sudden the meat gets stuck in your teeth, and because it gets stuck in your teeth, it takes 6 hours for whatever taste that you have that's stuck in your teeth to become null and void.
Really?
So this it's not there anymore. 6 hours.
So everyone's going to be careful to floss their teeth.
You have to wait 6 hours in order to make sure that whatever meat that might have been caught between your mouth and your teeth has left. That's why the big difference between those two reasons would be if you chew meat to give to a baby, to a child. If you say the reason for the one that caught them in your teeth, so if you chew meat, the matter that caught them in your teeth, you have to make the sound. But if you say it's because you swallow the meat and the juices that come out, that strong taste that comes out from the meat, that's only if you actually would have swallowed the meat, then the reason you have to have waited 6 hours. These are some of the things regarding eating the milk after having meat, which are more of the common questions that people are very familiar with. But here we're discussing tonight, we're not discussing so much the eating of the milk and the meat together, but we're discussing the cooking of the meat and the milk together. But once we're discussing the prohibition of cooking meat and milk together, it's appropriate to mention that the prohibition of eating is directly connected to this prohibition of cooking. Which means, like we said before, it manifests itself that the prohibition of eating milk and meat together on a biblical level is only if it was cooked together. Only if it was cooked together is there a biblical prohibition of eating that milk and meat together. Yes.
That sounds unusual to me because
So how about...
That seems like that would mean...
What kind of change?
A half a size.
Where's the land going to get?
And a half a size of meat, and cook it together.
And what I'm doing is that...
The meat, the half a size of meat would be us.
In case we're presenting...
But the meat is all the person who eats.
Reason why I'm presenting it again?
In other words...
It's a good bit of tonight. Or tonight, but that's what I would say.
The total amount of eating the person would do would be just half a size. But so-called a share for some reason, right?
But the question is, here, the prohibition is not about the eating. We're now focusing on the prohibition of the cooking. The cooking itself, the mere cooking itself is prohibited. Forget about, you're not eating. You just want to cook. A guy wants to cook meat and milk together. The act of cooking itself is prohibited. Even if you never use it, he goes out and he cooks it and he throws it in the garbage. He's practicing in school. And then he throws him in the garbage, he turns less to prohibition. What'd you say? No.
Is this a thing that the person goes to sleep, even if it's a short period of time, he gets up, he might be able to change from night to
But does it mean if there's an opinion that says it, or if there's a family member?
Something like that.
No. It says like this. The main chassuna says like this.
So the first guy is...
Hamavashel Vosa Tehora Lecholach Tehora Yishneim Kzayis. Right? If you cook together a total of gezayis, it's over the lav of Lo Savasha, transgress of the lav of Lo Savasha, v'lok, and he gets malchus. Of a bus of behemoth to mayor, the whole of Torah, but if one of the ingredients were not kosher, that would make it kosher. How do you like that? If one of the ingredients were not kosher, would make it kosher, and you can cook it. If either the meat is not kosher and the milk is kosher, or the milk is not kosher and the meat is kosher, whatever, as long as you need to have a double negative, or here you need a double positive in order for it to be negative, to be prohibited. You need a positive, it has to be kosher meat and kosher milk. If you have a double positive, it's kosher milk and kosher meat, then there's a lot. There is a negative. There's a prohibition. That you're not allowed to eat. Not allowed to cook it.
So,
but if you don't have both, if both the meat and the milk are not kosher, if any one of them are not kosher, then there's no biblical prohibition. Let's see. Now, the logic you could say behind it is anyways it's prohibited. Right? I mean, there's something wrong with the food anyway.
To eat it, but it's not prohibited.
Right, look at right. But the Torah, right.
Save yourself alone.
Right? Let's say if another case, if you have basa chaya va'uf b'cholof, it means the prohibition is only of an animal, a behema. But if it would be a basa,
that's why the middle guy doesn't need to have a
basa chaya va'uf b'cholof. Let's say you have a chicken, you cook chicken with milk, or a wild animal with milk. Wild kosher animal with milk, or basa behema b'cholof chaya, or let's say you use basa behema, meat from a behema, from a domesticated animal with cholof from a wild animal, and I have, in parentheses, even though this din is of cholof chaya is not in the foolish in the Rambam, but the Rambam said that it also has that if it's milk from a wild kosher animal, it also, meaning the Rambam, when Hasanah is presenting it, needs to be a behema from a kosher animal and the milk from a behema. Meaning a domesticated animal, the meat from a domesticated animal, and milk from a domesticated animal. But if it's meat from a domesticated animal and milk from a non-domesticated animal, well, then that would not be prohibited. So he wants him to come up and mitchilas a perik alocha given the rules of the enisa and the bosa behema tahora becholof tahora and came bechay becholof chay enisa bechini becholim perik al bosa. He wants to say that so this prohibition is very narrow. When this actual prohibition, because that's the kosher animal, kosher milk. From the behemoth food, domesticated animal, domesticated milk,
right.
Which is very common. What milk? Usually cow's milk is a common milk that's domesticated, right? So, in the river Galavazet, if you don't have all those ingredients, like we said, then it would be, there's no problem of cooking it. Cheeseburger, when it wasn't cooked together. You didn't cook the burger with the cheese.
Well, let's say like a hero sandwich in the non-kosher
A cold pastrami and cheese sandwich.
Right.
So if you excuse that.
Right.
Expression.
That seems to be from the
Easter of the Torah. In other words,
the Torah says the kid, which he says, domesticated behemoth,
yes,
with milk from a domesticated animal, kosher, as the only prohibition if they were kosher animals and kosher milk is a prohibition. But it says it three times in the Torah. And the question is, why does the Torah say it three times? So the rabbis say that one is referring to eating, the prohibition of eating. One is referring to cooking, and one is referring to having benefit. Let's say you would have benefit, pleasure, benefit from the bus of B'cholav, that's prohibited on the Torah level. That answers your question that there is a biblical prohibition based on that cost. Let me accept them. Right. We'll see. We have to see more in that mix.
It's from the pasuk.
The Gemara, the Chazal, explain the Mosef Shad in the Pasuk, just like the Torah says, Ayin Takas Ayin, eye for an eye. The Torah says eye for an eye, but what does it mean? The Chazal says the value of an eye for an eye. So it's biblically, I mean, that is the meaning of the Pasuk. The Torah Shabbat Peh explains the oral law, make the oral Torah, also will explain the meaning of the Pasuk, how do you translate the Pasuk. It's not a halacha emotion, it's they're explaining what the words of the Pasuk mean. So this is the definition of the Pasuk. Just like the Torah Shabbat Peh explains, how do you read a letter? How do you read a word? An aleph, a bays, a gimel. This is an aleph, it's a bays, a gimel. So they tell you this is the meaning of the Shabbat, the Zibach, and the emo. You can't eat it and cook it and benefit. So that's a biblical prohibition from the Torah itself. Okay. You're welcome.
Not always famous. Since the same guy is blind,
So skip a little bit. Also, he said that an animal that died, he said it has to be a kosher animal. But it doesn't have to have the ritual slaughter of sheep yet in order to be prohibited. As long as from the kosher family, let's say it died with a nevela. But let's say the shochet, a lot of times if the shochet didn't do a good shchita, he didn't do a good job, because there are many halachas of shchita, so it didn't come out good, so the animal is a nevela, you can't eat it. But the fact that it came from a kosher species, the prohibition still remains. I mean, you can't say, well, I go to culinary school, and by the way, I can't think of any reason it wasn't slaughtered to me, so it's not kosher anyway to me. But no, the fact that it came from a kosher family, the prohibition is it remains on that animal. To the prohibition is in effect from a kosher animal with kosher milk. Is that clear? It doesn't have to be that the animal was slaughtered. You have an OU on the animal, and you can technically eat from the animal.
Just say it was a cow or something.
As long as it was a cow or a sheep from that family, then it's prohibited. Even though it was shot with a rifle, exactly. Hunted down, still prohibited to cook it.
The item is kosher. It doesn't matter how it was killed.
What does that say? Exactly.
A deer that was shechted,
even though a deer is a kosher animal, but since it's a chaya, it's a wild animal, a deer is not a domesticated animal. Is that correct, Professor?
You can't domesticate.
See what that professor can back us up? Therefore, it's not included in this prohibition.
When a guy says,
but it could be, if we want to suggest, beat the Rambam slower a little bit. But the Rambam said that it was commonplace maybe to use the third of the zera. So it could be that a chayim, which is a much harder animal, wild animals are hard to catch. So it might not have been so common to use the wild animals meat to serve the desire because it was hard to get. So maybe I'm just suggesting an idea. So maybe that's why the Torah possibly never prohibited a wild animal. I'm just suggesting then reasons for a mitzvah if the Torah doesn't give it is an Indian. The Rambam at the end of Me'ilah says, you know, just to look into, to try to understand it, if I'm saying that Torah doesn't give mitzvahs without a reason, I should read the Rambam. I want to get, let's see, the Rambam is fascinating. It's the end of, say, Hilchos, end of Seif, the Sefer, Sefer Avoda, Hilchos Me'ilah, the end of the 8th parak of Me'ilah in the Rambam, he writes like this. It is appropriate for a person, the Rambam writes, to contemplate the laws of the Torah, the Holy Torah, to try to get to understand the end of the matter, get down to the bottom of understanding the matter of the laws of the Torah as much as you can, every person according to their ability. Every person has different, people have different abilities. How far they could go, and every person has to stretch and their ability to its fullest. Something that they don't have find a reason. Don't make something light in your eyes if you don't understand it. A lot of times people, they don't understand something, they say, oh, I don't understand, so it's not so important. Or it's and he says,
there's not a good reason for it.
If they don't know a reason, that shouldn't make it light in the person's eyes because you don't know the reason. He says, Torah was very strict about Me'ilah. Me'ilah means using something that belongs to Hagdish. It belongs to Hashem, and misusing something that was, let's say you have an animal that was designated for a carbon. You're going to want to ride on the animal for personal use.
אני מה אתה אומר, לא עושה בשעה, אתם לא מייחד, זה טיפול רב יהודה. When Moshe Rabbeinu kinged the Aaron to become Kohen Gadol, and the drop fell on his beard, that's a typical example.
Oh, I'm here. In eighth of Avonim v'ofer v'efer, you have wood, stones, dirt, ashes. Once you call the name of God on them, you become holy. You say this belongs to God. I make a hegdish. I make these stones hegdish. And anybody who misuses these items, even if he misuses them unintentionally for personal use, he takes the stone that he did to him and uses it for a pillow or something or whatever. He uses it for other purposes. He needs an atonement. Kavachomer lemitzvah. A mitzvah shechokdu l'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. That Hashem Himself created this mitzvah. If you put God's name on something, that creates a holiness, and no one could use it, and it's prohibited, and you need atonement. But God Himself put His name on it. God said, "This is a mitzvah. This is a commandment. A person should not be light in it, and because he doesn't know the reason, because he misuses it very good, because he doesn't know the reason." But a person who says, when the Rambam talks about the idea that it says in Torah, "Vishmatim as kochel kosei." That's called mishpatah v'asisa v'asav. You have to guard the chukim and the mishpatim. The chukim are the things that we don't understand. The mishpatim are things that we do understand. But he says, so what's mentioned first? The chuk is mentioned first. And you have to give emphasis. Because you have to give emphasis to the... Don't make light of the chokim. Don't make light of the things that you don't understand. And the Rambam goes into... he keeps on elaborating. But the idea that I wanted to bring up from the Rambam is a person has to go and it's appropriate to figure out as much as he can. So here also, that's why maybe with a lot of the Rishonim, try to explain what the possible reason why Hashem gave us certain mitzvahs. But back in the Minchas Chinuch, in the Hinei Hashir Kami Yavashim Yechayiv. So he brings down the Machlokes in the Gemara. How much you have to cook? We spoke about it before, but Levi says, in the Gemara Chul and the Kuf Ches and the Beis, Pligi Rav the Levi. Rav Seva, in the Chayiv, and the Mish, we call Echa Kazayis. Rav says, Rav's of the opinion, you need a kazayas of meat and a kazayas of milk to go together to have a lab. How in a kazayas cholev, a kazayas basa, over a bishop. Pachas mi kazayas mizeh, or mizeh ina over.
It's different, I'm asking, is this a mabayin of a meat that's far
as we find in halacha, very
quick.
What's the kazayas?
And you get
another space. We find in halacha a lot of times by the liquid, the idea of the Leviyas. We don't find, but you see, we find the concept in halacha, how much you have to drink in order for you to, let's say, make a bracha achrona. It's a machlokas. There is this machlokas, by the way. You have to drink the size of a kazayas of liquid to be chayav to make inside a burn of ashes, or do you have to drink it the size of a revius to make a brecha achrona, which would be 3 ounces. And therefore, they recommend trying not to go into that gray area between 1 ounce and 3 ounces. But if you drink 1 ounce, you then get into a gray area. Whether you're required to serve brecha achrona already, or you're only required after 3 ounces. But many things we find the concept of revius. But the question over here, being that the bus, for sure, that the buser goes with a kazayas, the shear of buser is a kazayas. So the question is, what's the shear for a liquid over here? So there's a machlokas. One opinion is use a kazayas from each one. The Levi Sova, the af chasi zayas is there, the chasi zayas is there. Even a half a kazayas from meat and half a kazayas from milk. Kivan the yish be a kol kazayis over the bishul. If you have a total of kazayis, then you're over on the bishul. Rambam kasev kan. So Yom Kippur is different. Because Yom Kippur, the shiurim is a different shiurim of Yom Kippur. The Torah's prohibition, the Torah says, "Chanevah shishalo suune be'etzem ayom hazeh." Person has to afflict himself on Yom Kippur. In order for him to violate that prohibition to be chayiv, the kores, to transgress by Yom Kippur, he has to drink or eat an amount that will satisfy him that he will not be afflicted anymore. Which therefore, it's a different measurement. That means, in order for, if a person eats a kazayas, an olive size on Yom Kippur, he's not obligated to kores. Why not? Because the Torah doesn't say he's prohibited to eat on Yom Kippur. Torah says you have to be afflicted on Yom Kippur. And you're still afflicted by eating just the kazayas. You still don't feel satisfied. You want misyashu daika. The man is called a kosevis. A date. If you have a date, the size of a date, which is larger than, which is large, volume is larger than a kazayas, larger than I think it might be in between, but it's larger than a kazayas. That will be the prohibition to be higher of chorus on Yom Kippur. And drinking is a size of money lugma. If you are more little, more than a kazayas, but less than a revius, would be the money lugma of a cheeks full. If you have a cheeks full of liquid, that would be the amount on Yom Kippur to be
effective. The difference between the this is mashed together. This one, if you have a half a kazayas of meat and a half a kazayas of milk,
that would be a total kazayas.
A total kazayas, which would be over them off if you cook them together.
Right, that's what Rav says. That's what I mean, Levi says.
I'm just curious if inui is if not being une happens after a person, once a person is eaten a kazayas.
If it's kazayas, he's still afflicted. He's still une. He needs to eat more than that to violate.
Over kazayas.
He needs more than a kazayas in order to take away that affliction that he has.
Then, in order to be able to eat a bashar of all of eating,
even less than with him. Even if Kasaya, sign of Kasaya.
What?
Yeah, say it again. Say it again.
Let's say a person is eating a thing.
Why?
Should the Mishnah be eating a thing? Kazayas. It would be Kazayas. So, that's called Achila.
That's called Achila.
So, what is that means? A person, Achila, eating is still. Whatever eating is, a person can still
feel afflicted.
Do that and be afflicted and feel bad that it's not.
Right, you know
exactly.
You ever see yourself when you're fasting, and if you'll eat a kazayas, right? You still feel afflicted. You still feel afflicted. When don't you feel afflicted? When you have a nice amount. When you have something more than just a minimum amount.
Okay, good. But then what happens if, if eating kosevet, if eating a little more than
eating a kosevet, eating a day.
If eating a little more than a kosevet, makes a person not feel afflicted anymore.
Right.
Then what is eating the shear of a kilo do? What changes comes over a person at that point? To the point at which he's eating the shear, not feeling afflicted is a real change in a person's physical mind.
Right.
You know,
status is a feeling.
If a person eats the shear of a kilo, What happens to that person?
That's the status of that family.
That makes the name Akira so special.
Right, because obviously, obviously, there's you've eaten, but yet you haven't been, you haven't been mishashiv daita, you haven't really felt enough satisfaction. There's something, there's different levels. If you have less than a kazayas, you really have negligent in many ways. You have very negligible. You're very little. It's nothing to write home about.
I see.
But when you have that amount of kazayas, it's really something to write home about. But you still didn't reach a certain level. Did you eat? You ate. So you had an achila. So when the Torah uses the language of achila, wherever the Torah says, eat a kazayas, eat matzah, or don't eat not kosher animals, don't eat chametz. So all those things, but eating kazayas, you would have satisfied. You ate. You still might be afflicted. You ate. The Torah said, I don't want you to eat those things. So I want to do certain things. That's called you ate. But to feel, you personally I went out to a restaurant. I don't feel full. You ate, but you still missing in your feeling the benefits of the eating. And that's a level that the Torah that's prohibited by Yom Kippur. I don't know if you eat an amount that's going to.
When you come with much more together in two kazayas, that's what I can understand. That is possible by cooking the meat and the thing, that's even less. It's like a half and a half of kazayas. So that's really very minuscule. So why is the Torah obligating you to allow in such a tiny amount, like a half an ounce and a half an ounce, but we still have all the bowls out.
Obviously, it's going with the shear of the kazayas, but the size of the shear of the amount. So then you have the amount of an olive. So at the end of the day, between this and that, I'll look at the pot.
What about the pot that burns out?
Okay, but good. So that he didn't. We'll discuss more about that. But he doesn't go into that point. We have to look at the language of the Rambam.
So what does that mean? The person eats a
Then you get into a different question. He's not obligated colors. But then there's a different question called Chatzi Shir. Chatzi Shir, just like over here, which he's going to discuss also, the question of if we say that everyone agrees, less than a kazayas, there's no, he will not get malchus lashes if he cooks less than a kazayas. Combined. The question is there a biblical prohibition to cook any amount? Except you don't get malchus until you cook the size of an olive. Well, there's no biblical prohibition to cook a small amount of milk and meat together. Or we'll ask the question somewhere else. The Torah says don't eat pork. And then I tell you, when is the person get malchus? When we have a kazayas, an olive size of pork. What about if you want to eat a taste of pork, not an olive size? Is it biblically prohibited?
Without
going to get lashes. But he didn't eat a size of olive. But is it a biblical sin, or is it just a rabbinic sin?
Then what is the reason?
So that's a machlokas in the Gemara.
And
Rabbi Yochanan, or Yisrael. And we foster it like Rabbi Yochanan. A chatzi shir also in that Torah. Yeah, because the real man of this is the apostle by Chelev. It's kol Chelev lo se Chelev. Any amount of not kosher fat. Even though you won't get kohel. For Chelev, in certain not kosher fat, you won't get kohel. It's penalty. The rest of the kazayas. But the Torah is teaching you that there are all things that if there is a if it's prohibited, it's still a prohibition. If the fact that you won't get lashes, the fact that you won't get lashes until you eat a certain amount, but the prohibition is in place. You know, there's a swear of chazan that's the roofer also that's given. Another swear that's given why a chati shir is also in the Torah is because
so the reason why in the Mishnah over here.
So another swear that's given. Another swear that's given that you could join. You have a half of a shir. You can only join to another half and then it'll come to a home. So this is what Chinuch discusses. That he says that the shear, the general shear, the shear of halacha Moshe Messina is the kazayas, unless a different shear was given. So therefore, even though over here the word achila was not written, and he said general achila means the kazayas, here he says don't cook, but the general rule is the popular, by popular demand, the kazayas is a popular shear. The halacha Moshe Messina is that when the Torah forbade something, unless I tell you otherwise, as I indicate otherwise, what is the amount, the normal amount is what is the kazayas. So therefore, the halacha Moshe Messina, the shear is the kazayas. And there was a discussion with Chassi. There was a discussion in Rachonim over here. If you would cook less than a kazayis, would it be just like every other Chassi shear, or would there probably be some differences? So that's the something that's discussed that we have to be looked into.
You can't be evil, but you have to.
I think we're all the way to the point where we have set up dishes in separate pots and all of them.
Very good. Because
it is not a...
There's a concept
it makes
that
it not,
the taste... When you cook, the Torah itself says...
And since maybe you
said
that,
the Jews went to war. If you look by Midyan, look by Pashas, Pinchas and Matos, that area, Pinchas and Matos over there, the end of Midbar, that they said, they gave the laws that of the name. It turns up purging. It says utensils that are used by fire, you have to use fire to clean it. However the utensil is used, if they go against it the way it became prohibited, that's the way it got rid of the kosher. So therefore the Torah itself gave you laws of how do you make the utensil kosher. But the question is why do you need to, what's the problem, Shmuel is asking. If you didn't cook it together, what's the problem? The problem is a utensil, you're using a utensil today, so that's called a ben yomo. It's from today's utensil. Today's utensil has absorbed, I cook meat in this utensil. Absorbed in the walls of the utensil, and now what's absorbed in the walls of the utensil? Chicken soup. Now I have chicken soup paste in the pot. I might have even cleaned the pot, but it's absorbed in the walls of the pot. I go ahead now, I put some milk in the pot. That milk will get the taste of the what?
The
chicken soup. Right? Even if you washed it. But when something is used in that way,
it's not porous. Like a glass, which is
non-porous. So the glass would be different.
So therefore the utensil absorbs
the taste of that food. And therefore, if you cook another food in it, it would be a problem. And therefore, there would be a mixture of chicken soup and milk. Therefore, But technically, if it's after 24 hours,
to a woman that
then that's called anal or normal. If you use a pot for chicken soup 24 hours ago, now it's 24 hours later, that taste is called the taste that the chicken soup is going to give us from the dairy will be called a minister town of Gam, or give it a bad taste. And that...
Right?
That would not prohibit that. That next thing that you say,
we still keep separate pots.
We still keep separate pots because the problem is the big problem we're afraid of, if you would use that same pot,
we might
the same
bread. So
if you get into a biblical problem, if you use the same pot, the same day, within 24 hours for meat and milk together. If you did not use it within 24 hours, there would be no biblical prohibition. But the rabbinic prohibition would kick in. Because the rabbinic prohibition over there is, because even though it wouldn't, it's because we're afraid of if you use it after 24 hours, then you're going to have to use it within 24 hours. That's called an inner ben-yom or outer ben-yom. Okay? So therefore, that's why it's very important to have separate dishes, because you can even come to a biblical prohibition if you're using the same thing.
Play devil's advocate. He asked about a pot. Then he asked about a dish, which is a chaining. Why do we have to change a plate? It's not all the fire. It's not that much of a draw. Why do dishes have to be changed when already taken off the fire? It's not really that much of a layer because it's not cooked.
Not the cooked item. First of all, the question is how hot you put the item on it, right? If you put an item
there, even though
there's also this question of irritation. There's if you pour directly from the pot, that will also make it right. Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Not just the pot.
And also, not only is your person there's such a concept. But if I put something, if I would put a piece of meat on the plate, or use the same plate for dairy, if I did not wash the plate properly, then I'll have some juices left in the meat, and that would be another major problem. Why you want to keep separate places.
I'm not
being
too, in the worst case, by a mile.
If a pot in which meat has been cooked within the last 24 hours.
Oh, sorry. Akanami, you're doing the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah is Yadu Chalitza, not.
Has dairy cooked?
So we would think.
Then.
What? We would think that.
Dairy becomes. So is
maybe over here
would
think since you say Chalitza.
Is that right?
That would be Tam Kikar, we would say. You see, the taste, it's like the taste that you use from that was in that pot from the meat, is like meat itself.
See,
you asked a good question. It would seem to get that biblical prohibition. We would have to say that, right? Because we say that the prohibition of eating it together, the biblical prohibition is only if it was cooked beneficial. It was cooked with meat and milk together. So if we say that food is, if we say Tam Ki'ikar, it would seem.
Can't lie,
because
really,
it makes you
as a good guy.
It would seem that would be the logic behind it.
That's the derisive thing. Tom Kiku is a derisive.
It's derisive. We hold this derisive. So I mean that's
so we just like so if it was a great benefit, then then cooking in it would be just like as if we had a Hatzisayas, meat in a Hatzisayas lemon, which is the example that we've been used this year.
Right, but like we said, it doesn't have to be, right, it would be similar to that, and we said that if we say that even a Chatzis Shear would be assimilated to it, so even if you don't have a full amount, right, so any amount,
apparently it's not Mishum Chatzis Shear, in other words, if a person cooked, milk in a pot and then put meat in an hour later, then apparently there are higher malchus, the same way as if they put meat and milk together.
Yeah, but should there be an issa in office if we would know that there's a. But that's
the chicken at 1 o'clock, and you cook and cheese at 1 o'clock. That's what he's asking, right?
So, right. So the question is, would you say, how far would you say with the tam ki'ikr? Today we're looking at Tosfos Chul in effect. Tosfos Chul is that's how far we look at the.
He wants to know if it's highest than that.
Persuaded to make that the tam should be like the ikr, to say that there should be higher milk, but that far that might be too far. The question is, it would seem to come out that regarding the din of kashrut, the Torah forbade the food, but the Torah said the Torah said you have to kashrut the thing, because you have to, or else if you don't kashrut, if you don't purge it, the food would be prohibited. Even though the person would not get malchus if he would eat that food, meaning it would come out, he ate food that was cooked. That he used a pot that was used for milk. That had a taste of milk and meat together, right? They had milk and then he had meat. So it's which comes out the combination of milk and meat together.
Right.
However, and that the Torah is prohibiting.
Okay.
The Torah is prohibiting you to eat that. The question is there a biblical prohibition of when a person would cook with such a pot? Would there be a biblical prohibition of cooking as well? That's one question Yitzchak wants to know. Or maybe is there a prohibition of the cooking itself? Do we say that the take? That's his question. And question number two is, what would be regarding malchus? I think Tosfos Chul says we wouldn't get malchus. We wouldn't get malchus for the cooking of such a thing. Therefore, we won't say with the
time. We can't evaluate how much of a volume we're getting out of it. But we can't evaluate how much are we getting a kazayas anatik. We can't evaluate the absorption. How can we evaluate?
There's no way we can evaluate it.
No, I'm asking, right. Can we? That's what I'm saying. Can we evaluate it? That's just what basically this question is. Is the absorption... No, I'm asking that question.
Right.
Okay, I'm asking. Is the absorption?
Right, it's in the rules. How much?
Right.
The question is, even if you could evaluate it, the question might be, the taste, on taste, maybe there wouldn't be any malchus. Might not be any malchus on taste, even though the taste would be awesome ever. We have to look, there's a big toast on Tom Cake, we have to look and see what he says about it.
Well, it's right, you're talking about the taste of a case where Busser called it and cooked in the pot, and then...
Well, not Busser called, no, let's say you're okay, so you have chicken soup, you cook chicken soup in the pot, then you wash out the pot, but cooked beef, and then you went ahead and you put milk in, you heated up milk in that pot that you cooked beef in.
Right.
We're not going to give malchus for the cooking.
I see. Okay.
We're not going to give malchus for cooking, even though you use the same pot.
Right, okay.
We're not going to give him malchus. If we're going to marry, he'll have the milk. We're not going to give him malchus for it.
I see.
So we have to see more about this, how far we
start.
The question is, let's see, why don't we give malchus? Why don't we extend it? And the question is, how far do we extend the taste? See, you have to recognize this. It's still taste.
How much of taste do you make?
There's another question, but the question,
what is the issue of
taste that. That's from the Guru Mitya, from the parish when they went to war, the Torah says. You have to kosher the kelim. You have to make those utensils that were used from that kosher food by the goyim who owned those utensils before you defeated them in war. Now when you defeat them in war and you bring them back their utensils, the Torah says you have special laws that before you eat from those utensils, you have to purge them. So why is the Torah telling you to purge them? To get rid of whatever was absorbed in them? Because the Torah is obviously telling us that it's forbidden for you to eat from those utensils. What's left in those utensils? There's only taste. The answer is the taste that from those utensils would forbidden for you to benefit from that taste because it has enough benefits from eating from that taste.
I just question the whole of the shrimp to say, because we're doing that in the mid-general word about shrimp. It's the same whole office with shrimp exactly.
Well, so you said the word shrimp. What do you mean by shrimp?
I mean pig. Pig was in the place. You have to purge it.
So it's right, because pig, because if
what else you mix milk and things, you have to purge that?
Again, so the pig, so if you have a taste of pig, and you cook something, you cook macaroni, and you have a taste of pig and macaroni. So if we say tam kieka, the taste is like pig itself, just like eating pig.
So it's the same tam kieka by treif as much as possible challah. That's my answer. Right. It's the same method by treif.
There might be differences, you know, when you say chaticha asanas in the veil, there might be technical there, but the longest. So I'm saying the general thing would
have to be purged both ways.
They have to be
purged both ways. Whether it was trade or whether it was mixed.
Whether it was not kosher or not kosher animal. Right. I mean, not even if it was not kosher animal. Also, it might not have a problem with basa b'chalav, because basa b'chalav is something about kosher animal, but it has other issues. It's still not kosher.
It has to be purged.
And it has to be purged. So therefore, not kosher.
So that kosher food has to be purged, and basa b'chalav has to be purged.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, I think we're going to go.